What If You Could? Written by Jacinda Ardern. Adapted for young adults by Ruby Shamir. Narrated by Jacinda Ardern. All rights reserved. Guidance is recommended for readers under the age of 15. This book touches on sensitive topics such as mental illness and violence, as it recounts incidents that took place in the author's childhood and a crisis during her term as Prime Minister. Please read with caution, and if you need free and confidential support, you can call or text 1737 in New Zealand or 131114 in Australia anytime to talk with a trained counsellor. For the leaders of tomorrow, who just don't know it yet. Prologue. There are not a lot of options available to you when you're alone and stuck in a school bathroom stall after hours. There's the usual method of just opening the latch, but I had tried that for 5 minutes, and all I had managed to do was take the skin off one finger. There's the option of shimmying under the door, but the gap for this particular cubicle was on the small side. Besides, I'd already weighed the risk and decided that being found wedged halfway under a bathroom stall door would be much more humiliating than the situation I was already in. I was at Cambridge High School, and the regional United Nations speech competition was about to start, but instead of warming up, I was stuck in a bathroom and starting to panic. My nerves at speech competitions weren't the best under normal circumstances, even when I wasn't trapped in a bathroom. While I loved talking to people to share a story or an idea, the worry that came with public speaking was almost debilitating. From the moment a competition was announced, I fixated on it, barely thinking of anything else. I slept poorly the night before each competition, waking up every few moments to work through whether I had memorized my speech well enough and what I would do if I lost my place. By morning, my stomach went into such terrible knots I couldn't eat. As my speeches grew longer, I discovered a new problem, the worst one of all. Sometimes I couldn't speak, literally. It always happened about 3 or 4 minutes in. My mouth went bone dry. My lips began to stick against my teeth. I struggled to form words properly. And if the speech went more than 5 minutes, I'd be unable to say anything at all. The cause was simple. When I was nervous, I lost the ability to make any spit in my mouth. It was as if my brain was so focused on whatever was causing my stress to go up and my heart to race, it couldn't do anything else. I tried everything to fix it. Strong mints, drinking lemon water, repeating the word lemon, lemon, lemon before taking the stage. My mother even visited the pharmacist, returning with a set of sweets intended for cancer patients whose salivary glands had been damaged. Nothing worked. If anything, my obsession made it even worse. Interestingly, I never stopped to ask myself why I was so nervous. By all standard measures, I was good at giving speeches. I spent time preparing my arguments carefully. I learned every speech so thoroughly, I barely ever needed to glance at the cue cards I made. I'd won prizes at school and a few regional ones too. But the truth was, I could never shake the feeling that something could go terribly wrong, and that when it did, not only would I let people down, but it would also be proof that I wasn't good enough to be there in the first place. It was my history teacher, Mr. Fountain, who came closest to explaining what was going on. He'd also done speech competitions in high school, even winning the National United Nations competition in 1989. When I told him about the extent of my nerves, he nodded thoughtfully. "You know, Jacinda," he said, "some days I stand up at the front of this classroom, convinced that someone is going to jump out from behind those desks and reveal to the whole room that I don't actually know what I'm doing." It took me a moment to understand what he was saying. Mr. Fountain was the best teacher I'd ever had, and yet what he was describing felt so familiar. That's when he used a phrase I would remember for the rest of my life. He said, "That feeling is called imposter syndrome." I took this in. Imposter syndrome. Two words that felt like pieces of a puzzle clicking together. I could not imagine why Mr. Fountain